Well, good morning. There may be a few of you in the room that have heard me give this message before. And to those, I will tap into a message that was given to me by my eighth grade history teacher, Bob Troyer. Repetition is the mother of all learning. So, all right, let's start with a prayer. Lord, thank you for today, for this time to gather together. I just pray that you will speak through my words. In your name, amen. All right, has anybody ever gone zip lining? Any zip liners in the house? All right, I hadn't either until about 5 years ago. Nate and I were celebrating our 5-year wedding anniversary down in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. So we're down in Tennessee. We've got that picturesque cabin looking over the Smoky Mountains. We go on hikes every day. We're binge watching Breaking Bad. But we needed a pinnacle thing that we did together. So we had decided that we were going to go whitewater rafting. I was good with that. I got the boat, the water, been there kind of, done that. I was comfortable with that. However, the water levels were really low that year, or at least that week in Gatlinburg. So we had to go to option number two. Option number two, I was not as comfortable with. I can kind of do heights, but it's the whole like jumping off for a zip line. You have to jump off of a ledge in order to have the fun. That's where I kind of drew my line. So, but I was on board. Nate and I decided we were going to go zip lining. So I mustered up and we went and started the course. So they have a safety course when you first get there. It's kind of to help you warm up to the idea because obviously there's going to be some people that have some jitters with it. So you go into this room, you get on a harness, they show you all the safety features and how that you know that this is a very safe endeavor, even though it doesn't might not feel that way. They give you a video that you watch, and then you get to practice. So practicing looked like you get all harnessed up, and they hook you up to your first little zip line, and you start here, and you hop off a little edge, and you go about as far as here. Little hop. That was okay. I made it through there. And then they did another little practice run, and it was a little bit longer, probably from here to the back of the church. Again, I did okay, but I was still just a little bit anxious because there's that point where you have to step off the ledge. Well, finally, we get to that third, which they said, okay, party's on. This is your run. And you have about 7 to 10 runs that you do of different lengths all throughout this little area of the Smokies. It was beautiful, of course, but you get to this point. And you're stepping over the ledge, and you've done the practice runs, but when you get to the real deal, this isn't like a treehouse height down. This is like maybe a couple 20 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet down, and you're standing at the edge, and you have to step off in order to go. And the thing is, they tell you after you're like to that point that there's no turning back. You're where you are, and you have to finish this run. So every single time we would finish a run and we'd get to that point of starting a new one, I'd have to muster up the courage and jump. Okay? So this is the same type of feeling that Esther has. She's on that proverbial ledge and getting ready to jump off. She's getting ready to walk into the inner room with the king. And now, if you don't know, the inner room, it's a kind of a sacred place, I would say, where people are not supposed to come in. And if you come in, the default is that you die or that you're exiled. But the king can pardon you. So default, die, or maybe pardon. So she's getting ready to do that. She's kind of caught her breath, and she's jumping off that proverbial ledge. So how did Esther get into this predicament? Well, if it's been a while since you've read the book of Esther, let me just paint the story for you. Esther grew up as an orphan. Her parents were killed, and her cousin, Mordecai, decided to raise her. So we had King Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, depending on which version you're reading. He was kind of a hot and cold kind of guy. You know, some days he was just fine, but if you might if you've heard within this story, he's without a wife, and that's because it was Queen Vashti, and he was having this big elaborate party, and he called for his queen to come in front of his guests, and she said, no. And so he said, all right, you are. Go off on your way. You have been divorced. So that's a pretty big deal. So Esther, Queen Vashti has been divorced, and the king is starting to do a nationwide search for his next queen. So what I picture this as is essentially similar to The Bachelor. You've got a couple rounds, and hopefully you become the queen of Persia. So Mordecai encourages Esther to go and try out, to submit herself. So the king has sent out to the different regions some people, some eunuchs to represent him, to start the search. So first round is she goes up to this eunuch, and he decides if she's in or out. The eunuch decides that she's in, so she's very pretty. So what that does is it sends her into the second round. The second round is a lot more extensive. So she's given her portions of food, which is probably like adding to the amount of food that she's eating, essentially rounding her out, plumping her up, because that is beauty in that time. Additionally, she is given beauty treatments for 12 months before she sees the king. So these are oils and things to make her look as beautiful as she can before she steps in front of him. And when I say steps in front of him, what I really mean is that the king is going through women and enjoying them for an evening to see if this is the queen for him. Not that delightful if you think about it. But so this is where Esther is, and Esther has her evening with the king, and he decides, yes, this is the woman for me. And he appoints Esther as the queen. Now, once she becomes queen, her cousin, Mordecai, decides he's still going to stay pretty close. So he's out near the gates of the temple, and he happens to hear this plot to kill the king. So he tells and lets the king know there's somebody trying to kill you. King says, thank you. The people are off, and Mordecai, the king is in debt to Mordecai. And then the story goes on, and the king appoints his second in command, his right-hand man, the person that can carry on some of the duties that he needs to do in his stead. This guy's name is Haman. And Haman has kind of an ego. Haman likes all of the privileges of being second in command. He loves that people have to bow down to him. So he's walking through Persia, and he's awaiting as people are bowing down to him. And there's this man that doesn't. His name is Mordecai. Circle back there. And this makes Haman very angry because he's got that ego. But instead of, addressing it head on, he decides, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the king and tell him that there's this group of people that aren't giving him the proper respect that he needs. So he goes to the king, says this. He says, you know what, king? How about I write a decree and that helps this situation? And the king saying, okay, this can be part of your role, second-hand person or second-in-command person, says, okay. So Haman writes a decree that essentially offs the entire Jewish population. Plunder. Getting rid of them. This is the Holocaust. He's going to get rid of all of the Jews in Persia. It's a big deal. And Mordecai, as well as the rest of the Jews, as this decree has been posted, is devastated. And he realizes in the process, they have about 3 days or so before this is going to go into place. And Mordecai realizes that Esther, his cousin that he has raised, is the one person poised to help fix this situation. So he goes to Esther, distraught, and tells her that she needs to go to the king and ask him to overturn this decree. But there's an issue, because Esther hasn't been seen by the king for 30 days. That's a really long time for someone. For the queen, she has basically two roles. One is that she is the companion to the king. And the other is that she is the public figurehead. She is the beauty. She is the representation of beauty for the king. So for the king to not have seen her for 30 days feels like a big deal because she's not sure where she stands with this hot and cold kind of guy. Is she on his good side or his bad side? She doesn't know. And she's thinking back to Vashti. Vashti didn't come that one time, and then he divorced her. If I go to him and I speak up, which a woman is not supposed to do, what is that going to do? He might kill me. So that is the background of Esther as she is getting ready, standing outside that inner room, getting ready to take that deep breath and walk in. So there's a phrase for this moment, and I once saw it in a movie a couple of years ago. Now, when I watch a movie, it's kind of mindless entertainment, take it in. I don't usually remember too much about it. This clip is from We Bought a Zoo, and honestly, other than the title, I have no idea what the movie is about other than they bought a zoo. But there's this one clip in it that just has resonated with me ever since I've seen the movie. And I'm going to play it for you up here.
Insane courage, just literally 20 seconds of just embarrassing bravery, and I promise you, something great will come of it.
So it's been a while since I've been in the dating realm, but this is dating advice given from dad to son. However, I've been able to apply that idea in several areas of my life. So I have found that this idea of taking 20 seconds of insane courage has helped spur me in different areas. Sometimes that is seeing a need when I'm out and about, a woman who needs a ride, and mustering up the courage to be like, yeah, I could give a ride. I'm going to ask her if she wants a ride. Or maybe it's in my job, I'm a financial advisor, so maybe it's calling up somebody that I know and saying, hey, would you be open to having me help you with your 401k? That takes a lot of courage. I have summoned this idea when I am sitting in a meeting with a client and I'm noticing that their memory is starting to change. The way that we're interacting has shifted, and I'm realizing that all of a sudden I'm going to need to start bringing their child into this meeting. But that's a really awkward conversation to have with someone. So mustering up that 20 seconds of insane courage to have this very candid conversation with somebody. I have found that we have these little pieces, little steps in our life where we have to muster this insane courage, 20 seconds, in order to get where God is taking us. So I think about Esther in this moment, and her people's fate hangs in the air. And she is the one that's in the position to make the difference. There is nobody else that has the same influence capability that she does. So she is the most likely person to enter that inner room and change history. But she could also simply get the king on a bad day and be killed. There's another little piece. The king does not know that she is a Jew. This is something she has kept from him. So not only will she have to get past this 30 days of not seeing him, is he going to be prepared for me or not, but she also has to reveal something that she's kept a secret from him, which could also make him angry. But she gathers herself, takes her 20 seconds of that insane courage, and steps into the room. And the king immediately extends his scepter, which means that she is allowed to be in the room. There's no worry for her to be killed. But she still has to have that conversation. And the king, that for her to come and do this is a very bold move. So the king knows that there is something deeply wrong that is deeply distressing his queen. And so he says, Queen Esther, what is the matter? Anything you ask for, I will give to you. And Esther says, King, come to a banquet with me. You and Haman come, and I will serve you a banquet. King says, great, we'll do that. So they get to the banquet. There's lots of food and merriment. And he again says, Esther, what is the matter? What is it that you need? I see you're anxious. Anything you ask for, I will give to you. And she again invites him into that relationship and says, King, I would like to have you and Haman again to another banquet. So they come to the next banquet, and there's merriment and eating. But they get to that point where the king is asking, Esther, what is wrong? Why are you so anxious? Anything you ask of me, I will give to you. And finally, she shows her cards. She reveals that the king has put a decree in place to wipe out all of her people and she herself. The king is so surprised. He had no idea this is what was going into place. And so he overturns that decree. And in turn, Haman, sitting there, he meets his end, his demise. Only Esther could have done that. And I think about that moment, that insane courage that she had to muster up. And for some, that doesn't seem like too much of a big deal. But I think of another woman who, as she made her way, tired at the end of a long and working day, is sitting on a city bus and simply says, I'm not moving to the back of the bus. That woman, Rosa Parks, with that 20 seconds of courage, maybe it was out of just tiredness, I don't know, but that 20 seconds of courage spurred a whole movement, changing a whole trajectory of another race of people. There are these little moments throughout our weeks, throughout our days, where we are summoned to understand our influence. Who is it that you are influencing? At your work, at your home, where you log in online? And how are you using your voice to spur God's message? How are you drawing people nearer to God? God has uniquely positioned you in certain people's lives, and your ability to listen to his heart and speak his truth with a soft and unwavering voice can change the trajectory of somebody else's life. It can change the pace of a movement. It can save a whole group of people. All it takes from you is an open and willing heart and summoning that 20 seconds of insane courage. Pray with me. God, we just ask that you will open our hearts to hear where it is that you would have us take action and to summon that bravery. In your name, amen.